This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The anti-secrecy organization WikiLeaks has just published documents revealing that the CIA has for years been hacking into Wi-Fi routers, worrying privacy advocates. But spying on Americans is hardly the worst thing that the notorious government agency has done. Indeed, infiltrating Wi-Fi routers pales in comparison to the CIA's sordid history in the drug trade in the U.S. and worldwide over the past 50 years. A new 8-hour, 4-part documentary series slated to air on History starting on June 18th exposes in great detail how the CIA was involved in production and dissemination of dangerous narcotics starting during the Cold War. That history spans continents from Southeast Asia to Latin America and even in American cities such as South Central Los Angeles. The film series is simply called America's War on Drugs, and it will be the first time that the CIA's involvement in the global drug trade is revealed on mainstream cable television. Here's a short preview of the documentary series.
CIA is, from its very beginning, collaborating with mafiosos who are involved in the drug trade.
Joining me now is Anthony Lape. He's the executive producer of America's War on Drugs. Welcome to the program, Anthony.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, I feel like after watching most of your documentary, I didn't get through all of it because it's 8 hours long, but from watching it, it felt like a simple way to cast what has happened historically is that America's War on Drugs was essentially a war of drugs, and that the CIA was this partner in helping to spread drugs and drug use. And it's just something that most Americans aren't aware of. Let's go back to the beginning. Why did the CIA feel that getting involved in drug production and drug dissemination was something useful for it as a spy agency?
Yeah, well, it's actually a pretty mind-blowing story when you look at, as you say, when you look at the extent at which the CIA was involved with drug traffickers and drug trafficking throughout the Cold War. But in some ways, it makes a lot of sense. Because if you look at Cold War policy against the Soviet Union, we were locked in a global battle for supremacy where we had lots of proxy wars going on. And in those proxy wars, we needed to team up with local allies. And often the local allies we were teaming up with were people who had access to guns, who had access to underground networks, who were some of the baddest guys to sort of in the area to help us fight the perceived threat of communism. So there's actually a lot of similarities between what drug traffickers do and what the CIA does. Also, they need to hide money, they need cloaked bank accounts. So they're always, it makes sense when you look at the CIA, which essentially, is in some ways a paramilitary organization fighting wars overseas clandestinely. It actually makes logical sense why they would team up with drug traffickers.
Now, among the things that the CIA was interested in was actually the effect of drugs on the human brain, right? I mean, the concept of Manchurian Candidate is not just a Hollywood idea, or a movie of that title. What was the CIA thinking when it wanted to actually experiment on how these drugs impacted the human brain? I mean, did they really think they could sort of weaponize the drug-addled brain?
Well, there was actually, you bring up, there were two aspects to the interests of the Central Intelligence Agency in drugs. In one regard, drugs were used as a tool to both raise money for overseas clandestine operations. They were also used to help raise money for our allies, like the General Vang Pao in Laos, who the CIA through Air America helped become the largest heroin trafficker in the world, leading to the heroin epidemic of the early 1970s here in the US. But at the same time, even earlier than that, as the CIA and America was locked in this Cold War battle to control and manipulate minds around the world, LSD became a very interesting drug. In the 1950s, it was first sort of synthesized, and the CIA had heard that the Soviets were starting to get interested in it. At first, to use it as a truth serum, the idea that we could give it to a or someone and break their personality down and get them to spill the beans. So it began in actually in the 1950s and through this, even the mid 60s and late 60s, a large scale program that was both part of the Department of Defense and the CIA. A lot of your listeners may have heard of this program, MK Ultra, that began trying to use LSD and other drugs to see if they could create the perfect soldier or assassins or brainwash people and put them into a certain state and get them to do what they wanted to do. Of course, the irony of all that, and this is one of the stories I never even realized, is how hugely impactful those secret tests were in really kickstarting the whole counterculture. Ken Kesey, who's a student in the early 60s at Stanford, was actually one of the first people dosed in this program. He went and got a job. He loved it so much, got a job in the lab, and then stole the whole stash and started it as his acid tests. So it's really not an overstatement to say that actually the introduction of CIA of LSD into this country was sort of the genie escaping the bottle, so, if you will, of the Central Intelligence Agency right. programs. It's a really crazy story.
So this idea, I mean, when you say the words MK Ultra, we immediately think conspiracy theory. And in fact, a lot of people over the years have expanded some of the truth from the CIA's war on drugs and its involvement there to a lot of conspiracy stuff. But how much documentation exists these days on this program? You know, it seems so far-fetched that our tax dollars would go into funding this. And so tell me a little bit about the kind of research you did to uncover these facts, documents, and even in some cases, it looks like you have some original footage.
Yeah, it's actually pretty mind-blowing, actually, how much is actually out there about the MKUltra tests. There's been many in the last couple of years, a lot of declassified documents. People who were part of the programs, in particular in Canada, actually sued the government because of the pain and suffering that they went through. And we also, one of our experts, Richard Stratton, who was a notorious pot smuggler and one of the founders of High Times magazine, he's a guy who actually went and spent a lot of time researching and talking to some of the CIA operatives who were involved in this, including George White. And he spent a lot of time actually with George White, who was one of the main guys testing people actually in San Francisco and then later in New York. And he spent time with White, and White showed him how he did it and showed him, explained to him how he had these secret rooms set up with a two-way mirror, and he would get prostitutes to bring unwitting men in, and that they would dose him, and then he would sit there and watch and take notes. So it was all pretty sordid, but you know, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction in these stories, and that is one of the things that we found. And I knew a little, I had heard about the MK Ultra program before, and I had heard about a lot of this stuff, including the conspiracy, so-called conspiracy theories about the CIA's involvement in the rise of crack cocaine in Los Angeles. And actually, I was just shocked by when you really dig deep into it, and when you start talking to a lot of the experts, and you start talking to former DEA agents, who many of whom feel the CIA was undercutting their mission to stop drug trafficking, and it really opens up a Pandora's box that is actually, the information is out there, and especially if you listen to, if you watch our series, you'll hear firsthand accounts from people who are involved. And that's why I think we were able to get this series on a channel like History. This is a very, very well documented program that really, we didn't put anything up there that we couldn't really double source or wasn't coming directly from some of our trusted sources and advisors. And you're really hearing firsthand accounts. So we hope it's going to be one of these series that really opens a lot of Americans, not just Pacifica listeners, but people across the country of all political stripes, to a lot of things that were done in our name that really speak to the hypocrisy of the war on drugs.
No, so just a reminder, the film is called America's War on Drugs. It's a four-part series running about 8 hours long. It's going to be airing on the History Channel starting June 18th. Now, when we think of America's history with drugs and the political hysteria among our elected officials in response to it, we think of 1960s drug culture, sex, drugs, rock and roll, right? And your film also goes into that and how the CIA, I mean, what was the role of the CIA in that? Because we associate drug use in the 60s with hippie culture, with kind of, this shedding of establishment politics. But the CIA was involved in that story too. And also, yeah. You go in, you tell us a little bit about Timothy Leary and his connection to all of that.
Yeah, so, you know, what's really interesting, and it's actually very apropos to what's happening today when we see all these hearings in Washington, you're having scandals involving our president, is the architects of Nixon's war on drugs. We really pinpoint in 1971, Nixon is really the first U.S. president to really declare a war on drugs. He actually never even didn't use the term. He called it a worldwide offensive because things were seeming so out of control with LSD culture, with heroin that was really hitting the inner cities and all these Vietnam veterans who were coming back. So what's really fascinating is that the main architects of Nixon's war on drugs turned out to be criminals themselves. These were guys, four of them, including G. Gordon Liddy, went to prison over Watergate. And these were the guys who really were the architects of Nixon's war on drugs. And what's fascinating is G. Gordon Liddy was really the law and order guy in Nixon's administration. And he got his start trying to take down Timothy Leary, who had started a kind of LSD commune on an upstate New York estate. And Leary came after, I mean, Liddy came after him, tried to drive him out of this very posh town called Millbrook, New York, and ended up, never could really get him on any charges, but it ended up driving Leary out of New York, drove him to the West Coast, right into the hands of the burgeoning counterculture movement, where Leary becomes sort of the spokesperson for acid and a group called the Brotherhood of Eternal Love, which was a secretive group that actually had a public face and was promoting acid use, and also had built very large labs in California to produce LSD on a mass scale. And they were really the guys responsible for spreading acid around the country. Mm-hmm. So it was another example of incredible example of blowback, where the attempts to crack down on drugs just caused almost the opposite effect.
Now, the impact of the war on drugs in the United States was perhaps felt most strongly in South Central Los Angeles, not far from where I am sitting right now. And that history has been well documented, the CIA's role in the spread of crack cocaine among particularly poor black communities is one of the great outrages in the history of this country. How do you showcase it in your documentary, America's War on Drugs, particularly as we are at this moment sort of waiting with bated breath about what we might see in the continuation escalation of the war on drugs under Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who seems to have this old-fashioned mindset of drug criminalization. So how do you expose what happened in South Central LA during the crack cocaine explosion?
Yeah, I mean, this was another story that I knew a little bit about. I actually knew Gary Webb a little bit and interviewed him in Mexico shortly before he killed himself.
Right, so, he's one of the great journalists who helped expose this.
Right, for the San Jose Mercury News. And that was actually much later, 1996. So what we tried to do with this story is really look at who were the key players and people on the ground who were involved, and to really try to separate sort of fact from conspiracy theory, if you will. So we have Celerino Castillo, who is a decorated DEA, undercover DEA agent, who was in El Salvador documenting how the U.S. airbase in El Salvador had become a trampoline point for cocaine that was being flown by CIA contract pilots who were trying to fund this illegal war against the Nicaraguan Sandinista government. Now, Congress had cut off funds under the Boland Amendment because the Contras had been committing all sorts of human rights abuses. So basically, the CIA-funded war effort needed another way to raise money. And they were flying cocaine into the United States on military planes a lot of the times, into military bases a lot of the times, and then taking that money, buying weapons, and bringing them down to the Contras. So what we tried to do was really look at who were the key players, and we got Celerino Castillo to talk firsthand about his experiences there, which is very well documented, that he submitted threat of perjury, a testimony to the Kerry Commission in the 80s. But we also went back and talked to Freeway Rick Ross, who is best known as a drug trafficker from South Central, who had is known for popularizing the crack form of cocaine. And Rick tells a really powerful story about his main supplier, a Nicaraguan who was a Contra supporter, who always, Rick explains, was talking about this war effort that he was supporting. And really what we show, and again, other people in the alternative press and the media have been reporting on this for years, but this is really for the first time laid out on mainstream television, this Rick Ross's story about how this Nicaraguan connection was selling him cut-rate cocaine, high-quality cocaine. And that's the key that we really realized here, is the reason why Ross became this nationwide figure and spread crack not only to South Central but all across the country was this coke that he was getting as part of the Contra pipeline was super discounted. Because it was discounted, he could undercut his competition. And the reason why it was discounted is because the Contra connection had a very direct route from the Colombians, so there wasn't a whole bunch of middlemen. We also learned from Rick and other sources that this connection was also bringing him guns, high-powered military weapons that were being sold in the hood in LA and other cities, as well as communication devices. And that was really the key. That was why Rick Ross was never busted until this supplier gets turned by the government and basically sets him up. Ross never got busted because he was always able to stay one step ahead of the police because he had high quality police radio scanners that were provided to him by this source. But I think really the biggest thing that we have that is really gonna break people's heart when you hear it is the former director of the DEA's El Paso office, intelligence center, excuse me, which is the DEA's nerve center, who was tracking all of this in real time in the mid-80s, who says on camera that they had caught four high-level traffickers flying into military bases, and he was told that their cases needed to be dismissed because it was a White House connected undercover operation, and they were told to back off. And he looks right into the camera and he says, this other agency was bringing in not hundreds of pounds, not hundreds of kilos, but tons. And this white powder, and I never forget when he looked it right in the camera and told me this, was poisoning black people. And this is a man who is not a Democrat, who is not a liberal, who is a huge critic of Obama, who is an older gentleman, who is literally the director of probably the most important drug enforcement administration office at the time, watching all this happen in real time. So I think it's going to be pretty powerful when people see this, because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people have been called conspiracy theorists for talking about this. And a lot of people were outraged when this in South Central, and a lot of people in South Central, even at the time, could sense that something was going on.
Anthony, I think part of the reason why it gets often dismissed as conspiracy theories is because it hasn't really made it into our popular culture that this is part of our history. For example, you know, you'll have shows like Narcos, which goes, you know, in depth into Colombia's war on drugs and the Colombian drug lord Pablo Escobar. But even in that show, you have hardly any role that the U.S. plays except to be those heroic sort of, you know, saviors and the ones that put Escobar behind bars, rather than actually be involved in the war on drugs alongside drug lords and other figures. So, it's something that even Hollywood seems to have a major blind spot on, right?
But what's interesting is starting this summer in July and then coming up in September, that is changing. Showtime is airing a new series called Snowfall, which it looks to be based on Rick Ross's story. I don't know if he was involved or not, but from the promos that I've seen, it definitely goes into this story and is about the CIA's involvement in the cocaine trade, and really tells it's promoted as the story of the birth of crack.
So your documentary series, along perhaps with this upcoming film, might do well to address this issue and really bring it into the American consciousness. Let's play a short clip from the film, and then we'll tell our audience where they can watch it. Here's a clip from America's War on Drugs.
There was the CIA that introduced LSD to the United States.
America's public enemy number one is drug abuse.
One thing that really makes a state grow and thrive is having a war. War feeds itself. Once you create the enemy, once you build the institutions, it will keep perpetuating itself forever.
And that's a short promotional trailer for America's War on Drugs, a four-part, nearly eight-hour-long series that's going to be premiering on June 18th on the History Channel. Anthony, where else can people find out about it? I suppose they would have to have a cable, access to cable to watch it. Maybe in the future it might be out on DVD or streaming.
Yeah, right now it's just on History. It's airing on Sunday night, and then every night after that, Monday night is the 80s and the story that we were just talking about, the cocaine story. Tuesday night is the story of the 90s and Bill Clinton, who actually played a huge role in the ramping up the war on drugs. And then we go into, in the final episode, which is will actually blow people's mind, is really the how the war on terror and the war on drugs intertwined, and particularly in Afghanistan, where really we show how Afghanistan has really just become a giant drug war. And both the United States and our enemies are hugely involved in the opium trade there to support our own war efforts. And the flow of heroin that's coming out of Afghanistan is now over 90% of the world's heroin is coming.
Wow.
Or opium is coming in. There's a direct correlation between that and this horrible opioid epidemic.
So that war continues, basically, is what you're saying. It hasn't ended.
Now we have an attorney general talking about, as you mentioned, bringing back sort of the most draconian policies of the war on drugs. So we feel it's really important, whether you're left or right, to really understand the true story, the origins of the war on drugs, before we start ramping it up all over again.
Well, Anthony, best of luck to you. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you.
My guest is Anthony Lape, executive producer of America's War on Drugs, which will be airing on the History Channel starting June 18th. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.